Sean Mines here, Power List Building 6, and today we're going to talk about building a relationship with the subscribers that are on your list. And, you know, building a relationship is one of the most important things that you can do for creating long-term sales. You know, one of the things that long-term and higher-end back-end sales, you know, one of the things that I've talked about before, and I'll talk about it here, is the idea that you can sell a low-ticket item, you know, a $50 item, even a $100 item. You can sell those with hype, and you don't necessarily need relationship. Of course, relationship increases your conversion rate even for those low-ticket items. But, you know, you can get away with just using hype and no relationship to sell a $50 product or a $100 product. But as you know, it's difficult to really make a nice income online with a $50 product or a $100 product. Generally, what happens is your lower ticket items tend to basically pay for your traffic. So, you know, if you're doing, say, $5,000 a month in a low ticket item, you know, that's 100 sales at $50. You know, you're probably spending spending some money on traffic generation. And what's happening is you've got a number of these individuals that would gladly pay $500 or $1,000 or even $5,000 for the right back-end product. And so what happens is so many people get in this trap. You know, they'll spend $1,000 a month having articles written, or they'll spend $1,000 a month on pay-per-click, or spend $1,000 a month on search engine optimization, and yet they're only doing a couple of grand, $3,000 a month. And if we look into their business, we realize that all they're selling is the entry-level product, the one that we sell up front to generate leads. And as we tie this into building a relationship, the only way that we're going to be able to sell these higher ticket items, the only way that we're going to be able to sell a $500 item or $1,000, $2,000 or higher than that item is if we build a relationship with our subscribers so that there's a high level of trust. And there's a number of different ways that we can build that relationship. Let me go ahead and open up the call and boy, I'll tell you, I know we got a real small group here, Brian, Kelly, and Wolfgar. But if you guys can help me out, this CD, this MP3, this recording will have a lot more value to it. It'll have a lot more life to it. So let me just ask, has anybody emailed someone online? Perhaps you've been thinking about purchasing something, or you've got a question about something. You emailed somebody online that was selling something, and you didn't get a response back. Has that ever happened to anybody?
Yes.
Is this Wolfgar?
Me, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Brian. It hasn't happened to me yet.
Hasn't happened to you yet? Okay.
No.
All righty. Wolfgar, that's happened to you?
Yes. We had a there was a mix up with a PayPal payment, and I sent a question, and I got an autoresponder response back saying, I'm not going to answer your question because of all the spam floating around, so this this email address doesn't even work. And I was given a URL to put in a help desk ticket, and it took the individual about 2 days to get back to me on the help desk ticket. All the while, I'm wondering, is my money that I just paid through PayPal accidentally, is that gone?
Okay. How did that affect your relationship with the person that you bought from?
Oh, I'm very suspicious of that person now. It was not at all a customer service type of response.
Okay. So well, let's ask Kelly. Kelly, have you ever sent an email out and not gotten a response back online, somebody that's selling something online?
Yes.
Okay. And how did that impact your relationship with that person or that company?
Well, I had bought an ebook, and there were several free bonuses that came along with the ebook, and one of them I was unable to open and access the information. I emailed her, never got a response back. I guess really I wasn't overly impressed with the ebook, and I really haven't even spent any time looking at the other information, the other free information that I got. I mean, it's just, I guess kind of once you get turned off for a little bit, I mean, it's such a simple thing, but then it's kind of like I devalued the other information, and I haven't even spent the time to even look at it any further. So very important, I guess.
Well, it's absolutely important. And I think it's interesting, I mean, talking with you folks, and I, normally if there's a larger group, then a lot of times we hear where there's been questions that you've asked about a product and not getting an answer back. But I think it's interesting that in both of these cases, you know, for that particular person's list, you're now a buyer, Kelly and Wolfgar both. You're both buyers. And so the propensity, if they followed up, that you purchase something additional from them is really, really strong. I mean, much more than just regular traffic or subscriber. And so now the question begs, if not having that email answered was, you know, had that much of an impact on you, you know, what does that say about our own email answering policies? You know, what, you know, how should that impact, you know, how we respond to people's questions?
It should be one of the top things on your list of importance. People through your funnel.
I certainly try to treat people, you know, the golden rule, treat them the way you would want to be treated. And so you're right, Sean. This has convinced me that I need to get back to people on my list when they have questions. It's convinced me I need to get back to them right away.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you, if I'm online and I'm not always online, or I'm on a phone call or something, I can't do it. But if I'm online and I'm available, and somebody sends me a question, you know, whether they've spent anything with me or not, it doesn't matter. They're on my list. You know, and I'm in the business of building a list so that I can meet people's needs. And if I can't meet people's needs for free, then, you know, what type of trust is being built that I can meet people's needs, you know, if they pay me? And obviously I can't do it all the time, but it's amazing when somebody writes me and I just happen to be online and I get back with them in like 5 minutes. And again, it doesn't happen all the time, but, you know, I'll get this email back that says, you know, wow, I can't believe it. I wasn't even expecting you to answer. You know, most people, you know, there's an autoresponder or whatever. And so all of this to say, I would go, you want to go out of your way to make sure that you're answering emails. And, you know, when you get to the point that you can't do it personally, where you really have to, you know, you have to do something else. I would challenge you, instead of going to a help desk, I would challenge you to actually outsource the answering of your emails. You know, you get to the point where you're spending 3 hours a day on email and you realize that you just can't do it anymore. You're taking in 10 grand or 20 grand or 5 grand or whatever the number is per month selling, but you're spending 3 hours a day because you're wading through all kinds of emails. And you know, if you're like me, you get good at, you know, you've got spam filters in place, and you still spend 5 minutes every morning deleting all of the spam so that you can get to the emails that matter. But when the day comes that, you know, there's too many emails for you to personally answer, you know, rather than choose and go to help desk, I would highly recommend hiring somebody to help you answer email, and what will happen is your conversion rates will stay a whole lot higher. So having said all this, I mean, the obvious idea with this is just to simply bring out the fact that how you treat your subscribers matters, and one of the most important places is when they send you a question. Okay, so if we're moving away from questions, and when we're gonna come back to how we can stimulate questions. Okay, but, you know, just really want you to have a feel for the fact that everybody on your list, whether you've got 50 people on your list or, you know, 12,700 active subscribers like I do right now, you know, everybody on that list is valuable. And if they're not valuable, then I need to question how I'm building my list. You know, maybe at some point you get to the point where you feel like each individual subscriber isn't worth as much. You know, then create some filters on your subscription, you know, gathering on your opt-in page. Create some filters so that you only get higher quality leads. You know, you can do that. But if, as long as you're collecting subscribers, you're making the assumption that they all have some value. And if somebody sends you a question, you certainly have to respond back to them. We'll come back to questions here and how you can use questions to increase your sales. But let's brainstorm the types of things that we can do, and we can base this on what we like to receive. Okay, so let's brainstorm the types of things that we can do with our list, with our subscribers, that that help us build a relationship. So just open the call up and let's brainstorm here.
One of the things that I've been wondering about lately, Sean, is do I want to get real personal with my subscribers? I mean, it seems to me that's the first way to start building a relationship. This week my cat had kittens, and you know the week after that the water heater in my house broke. You know, it puts a human element on the list that you're attached to, and so that's been one of my questions is how personal, how much of a relationship should I try to build?
Is this Wolfgar?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you what I do, and that is I don't get real personal about what's going on in my life. I haven't split tested, so I don't know. You know, I haven't built one list where I was personal and one where I wasn't. So, you know, I don't know how it impacts conversion rates. You know, my big thing is it's a professional relationship. So, you know, if someone comes to me because I'm an expert at creating a product funnel, or I'm an expert at creating high-ticket products, then that's where the relationship needs to be built. And that's a personal opinion. And, of course, that's how I've built the business, the business that I have right now. Go ahead, Kelly.
One particular email list that I'm a part of, that I actually pay to be a part of, what I've learned through his list and what he says to do is to give a little bit of yourself, because it is you with any niche, there's, you know, thousands of people selling that in that particular niche, and what separates you from other people is you. And so to give a little bit of yourself, but to give of yourself in a way that's relevant. And one of the things that he does is sometimes tells a little bit of an introductory story with, you know, nothing really very long necessarily, a sentence or two. And for me as a reader, and you know, everybody's got their things that they like or don't like, but I like the personal touch. That matters to me. And I struggle with things that are impersonal. So for me as a reader, I like that. There have been times where he shared things, and because he was on a personal level, it made me feel like that my own situation was overcomable, and that kept me, you know, subscribing to his list, basically. So that's my perspective on that and kind of what I've learned on one side of it.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And again, that goes back to, you know, this idea that and there's one idea that I haven't touched on. I'll touch on it in a split second. You know, I mean, I guess we go back to this brainstorming. You know, we talked earlier about how does it feel when somebody doesn't respond to a question, and now we can kind of look at, you know, how does it feel when someone is more personal or less personal. I mean, obviously, in a perfect world, we could split test it. We could build two identical lists. And the difference is that one list we treat personally and one we don't. One idea is that whatever you do with your list, you are self-selecting individuals who like your personal style. So, for example, if 100 people join your list, and let's just say, for example, that 50 of those individuals, you know, are people that really don't want to hear what's going on in your life, okay? And 50 of those individuals do, okay? And we don't know if this is the numbers 50-50, but in this hypothetical case, we've got 50 individuals that do and 50 individuals that don't. And let's just say that half of those individuals were on my list, where I do not share what's going on in my life for the most part. And then the total of 100. So the same 100 individuals were on my list, and the same 100 individuals were initially on, say, Wolfgar's list, okay? And let's say that Wolfgar is personal with his subscribers, and let's say that I'm not. what's going to happen over time is the 50 subscribers who identify with me and they like my style better will eventually spend more time with me. They'll open more emails. They'll buy more from me. The individuals who, you know, like that personal touch, like Kelly, they'll find that they will, we will find that people on, let's say, you know, that respond to that personal level of interaction will gravitate towards Wolfgar's list. And you know, Wolfgar's going to have more opens. He's going to have more people that buy. And then the flip side is that we're both going to get some unsubscribes. So Wolfgar's going to get some unsubscribes, people that, you know, don't want to hear about some of the personal things that are going on. I'm going to get some unsubscribes from people who, you know, believe that I'm too cut and dry, you know, that all I am is about money or, you know, whatever other types of things that you know, might surmise after spending a few hours with me. And the same thing happens with anything else on your list. You know, if we bring a list of 100 subscribers in, and let's say we all draw from the same pool, and in some way we all do, you know, if we're doing pay-per-click advertising or we're doing article marketing or whatever, if we're in the same niche, and in this case, I don't think any of us are, but if we were in exactly the same niche, then we can still compete with each other and find that out of the same pool of people who might become subscribers, some people are going to be attracted to Brian, some people are going to be attracted to Kelly, some people are going to be attracted to Wolfgar. You know, if we took that same 100 individuals and we opted them into our list, and I was targeting beginners, and let's say Brian was targeting people that are more at a more advanced level, then what will happen over time, and it may take 2 weeks or 2 months, what will happen over time is that people that are not beginners anymore will no longer be opening my emails because my emails won't be relevant to them. And, of course, you know, Brian, he's teaching the advanced material, then people who are beginners won't understand what Brian's talking about, so they'll opt out of the list. And really it happens with anything that we do. One of the things that's incredibly important is that we maintain consistency, that as, you know, we know that we're going to lose subscribers. We know that we're going to lose subscribers. So what we want to do is control who we lose. And so in order to control who we lose, we have to determine exactly who we are. You know, are we advanced? Are we a beginner? You know, at what level are we meeting people? And those are the people that will be building a relationship. Those will be the people that will be buying from us, that will be opening our emails, that will be developing a relationship with us. Everybody else will eventually drop off of the list. Now, one way that you can handle this is when you bring people into your list, you can have several sub-lists, and you can allow people that are at different levels or that, you know, have different needs to opt into various lists, and then you can email those individually, and you know, you may have a beginner's list and an advanced list, an intermediate list, or whatever the case is. So that allows you to kind of control some of those unsubscribes. But some of it's going to be personality. You know, what one thing that you will find as time goes on, especially if you get into teleclasses and coaching and that type of thing where there's really a personal element and it's not just an ebook anymore, but you will find that the personalities of the people that you work with, you know, tend to become similar. You know, if you're very fast-paced, you like to deal with people that are very fast-paced, pick up things quickly, then what you'll find is that the people that are most comfortable with you are the ones that respond well to that. You'll have others, you know, if you really deal with things at a very detailed level, perhaps you're more methodical, you work in a slower fashion, you talk slower perhaps, and for some people that's easier to understand, then you're going to attract that type of individual. And the person that just wants that information now and wants it fast and wants to get it over with and learn how to do it quickly, and they're, you know, they'll pay more for getting it faster, then that individual probably isn't going to sign up for your teleclasses or your teleseminars or your coaching or whatever the case is. Any questions on these ideas right here? Any questions on this?
Well, I was going to make one comment, Sean. That was, you've got to be yourself when you're communicating with people. You know, you can't put on a facade of something that you're not, because it soon comes out, and then they lose trust.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Congruency is a huge issue. Congruency is a huge issue. And so often people believe that because you're working online, you can be anybody you want to be, which in some cases is true. I mean, it, you know, race doesn't matter online. Education doesn't matter for the most part. I mean, obviously, if you know, you just can't do something physically, and you know, then you've got to outsource something. But you know, for the most part, you know, even a language discrepancy, as long as you can outsource, you know, the writing, the internet is just a great leveler and allows people who even, you know, you take somebody, and I don't know what the disabilities would be, but, you know, that might have a difficult time getting a job in the regular world, okay, that, you know, the offline world, because of some type of disability, you know, for most disabilities, you know, you can still get online and work, and nobody has to know that. And obviously, if you want to use the disability as a bonding point, then hey, you know, that's a choice that you make. But you really have the ability, regardless of education, regardless of health, regardless of disability, regardless of race, you know, just regardless of a lot of things, you can get online and be 100% equal to everybody else. You know, no, you know, as you have this opportunity to create something that is just as good as everybody else's, and you can perform just as well online, you know, regardless of what might hold you back in the offline world. At the same time, though, especially if you're going to move into any type of personal contact, you know, there has to be a strong level of congruency. And really, for me, I mean, the easiest way, like Brian mentioned, the easiest thing to do is to simply be yourself. And if you do that, again, you're going to lose some individuals, but you have to get over the fear of losing people. You know, you can't sell everybody. Out of 100 people, you can't sell everybody. So you might as well pick and choose the ones that you are going to sell, and be able to have some control over the ones that you're not going to sell. You know, if somebody doesn't like your attitude, if they don't like, you know, the way that you do business, that's okay. And obviously, we're not talking about not being ethical, and we're not talking, again, you know, the biggest thing is building a clean relationship with people, so that, you know, if they send you an email, you respond back quickly to them. Okay, so we're obviously not talking about not being ethical or not having good business practices. But in terms of just your general attitude, you know, the pace that you work, the way that you see things, you can certainly let that shine through. And what will happen is you'll find that some people, it'll work to your benefit. You'll draw closer. You'll make more sales. And then obviously you're going to alienate some people. But that's fine. That's the way it is. So any other comments, questions on this?
Well, I think you made some good points there, Sean.
No, thank you. You know, the nice thing about doing a series like this is, you know, I tend to, when I'm not doing a series, I tend to cover the basics over and over and over again. And the nice thing about this is we're really taking some time to delve into dealing with subscribers. It's not just about sending as much traffic to your site as possible and optimizing your squeeze page so you get the highest number of subscribers, and then optimizing every sales page so that people buy the most from those sales pages. You know, but I really like to believe that people buy from me because they trust me, because there's a relationship that's developed, because perhaps they've purchased something smaller in the past, they recognize how much I deliver, and then they purchase more in the future. So let's look at the types of things that we can give our subscribers to help build relationship. And I'll just throw out a couple of the things that I do, and then we'll kind of open the call up again. One of the things that I do to build relationship with my subscribers is content. You know, I'm very willing to teach people things without charging. And of course, my model is a tad bit different. You know, with thousands of articles at ezinearticles.com, you know, a lot of that free content, it's floating out there and it's there. And you know, I don't hold a lot back when I'm writing those articles, when I'm putting those articles on. I mean, there's certainly some things that it wouldn't be fair for me to divulge in those articles, because people have paid me thousands of dollars to learn it from me. But usually a concept like that, you can't really put it in 400 or 500 words anyway. But you know, sometimes I get the question, well, you know, how much content can you give away for free? And, you know, I think I said to somebody one time, you know, if you can't write 100 articles and still have something left to teach somebody, then you probably don't know enough about your topic. And, you know, that doesn't mean you don't need to be in that topic. It means that you need to go out and do some more research. And then another thing to think about is, you know, if you put 100 or 500 articles out there and, you know, most people aren't going to read all 500 articles just to find out everything that you have to offer. They read three or four articles. They get tired of searching for more in terms of the articles, and they say, boy, how can I buy this information rather than having to go search for it? And for the few individuals that are literally going to just go through every single article, they're not your buyers anyway. They wouldn't have bought from you anyway, so you haven't lost anything. It's absolutely free for them to search around. It doesn't take anything away. But what I do recommend for my clients is putting some content, some articles, some instruction in your email list, especially when you're first starting out. Now, I think all of you are subscribers of mine, so you know that I do that through ebooks. I give away a lot of free ebooks, and you know, most of those are PLR, MRR products. A couple of them, you know, the free giveaways I've personally written, but you know, most of them are things that I've collected over time that I've purchased the rights to. And so most of the time I give away those ebooks. I personally think they hold a higher perceived value. But if you don't have ebooks in your niche yet, if you haven't written them or you haven't found them, you know, you haven't built up that kind of storehouse of ebooks that you can give away, then, you know, my recommendation is content. You know, take some of your best articles and load them into your autoresponder. Give freely. And, you know, what I find is that the more that you give to your subscribers, the more relationship you'll build and the more that they'll spend with you long run. Another thing that I like to do is recordings like this. Now, obviously, I'm recording this particular series for sale, but a lot of the teleseminars, the single set teleseminars that I do, you know, I will load those up and just put them in my autoresponder series. And one thing that's really nice about the recordings in terms of developing a relationship is that people get to hear your voice. And of course, there's two things that happen there, and it goes right back to what we were talking about earlier, people self-selecting out. Some people that listen to you, you know, they'll say, I can't learn from that person. I can't, you know, he talks too fast, he talks too slow, you know, she talks too fast, she talks too slow. You know, they don't know what they're talking about. I know more about it than they do. And that's fine. They'll self-select themselves out, and they'll never buy anything from you, and that's okay because they wouldn't have been happy with it if they'd have bought. But the people that do listen to you and like listening and they like your style, then you've really taken that relationship to the next level. And the trust level goes up, and obviously the long-term result is that they're going to buy more from you. Any comments or questions on this idea of giving, you know, really giving to your subscribers to create that relationship and trust?
Sean, this is Wolfgar. I first started my internet marketing by responding to Stone Evans' product, plug-in profit site. And one of the benefits that you get from that is a extensive autoresponder strategy. And so I have a preloaded autoresponder with quite a bit of content. Not nearly every day in the first couple hundred days anyway is a nice crunchy article of good content. I'm wondering though, do I need to offer content on top of that? Do I need to offer you know, different books or free downloads or, you know, things of that nature? Or is that, I don't want to say is that good enough, but will people find that of value?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you have to look at what's in there in terms of the niche that's there, and does it deliver good value? I mean, if you were writing that series yourself rather than having had it preloaded, is it content that when you had received, if you were to receive it in via an email, you know, would it have offered value to you. You know, I mean, the question is, you know, would that have offered you value? I mean, I think that's the only difference between something that's preloaded, you know, and somebody else has already written versus, you know, what you offer. I mean, obviously, you know, if you purchase anything that you purchase that's, you know, PLR or master rights or, you know, anything that's pre-created for you, probably unless you go in and you personalize it and you really make it meet the needs of the people that you're building products for, then you're probably not building as much a relationship as you could be. You know, my thing with you know, pre-written emails and pre-written content is, you know, really should serve as kind of a framework for you to create your own product and your own line and create your own relationship. You know, one thing that I found with affiliate marketing is that, you know, when I do affiliate marketing, my conversion rates tend to be lower because there's less of a relationship that's built with whoever it is that I'm promoting, whereas products that have my name on them tend to have a higher conversion rate. So, yeah, that's kind of a long-winded answer. You know, I haven't seen the email, so you're going to have to go in and evaluate each email, ask yourself if this is valuable information or not. If you'd have written it, would you have written it? And if you would have, if it's good content, leave it in. If it's not, take that one out and put something else in that's good content. Does that make sense, Wolfgar?
Yes, that's good advice. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments on content?
Well, I have a comment / question. I'm not real sure if this is the correct place to ask, but currently what I do when I send out an email is, and which is contrary to how you do it, you write things pretty quickly, but I mean, I can spend up to a day to 2 days writing 1 to 2 articles. I add that information to my website, and then the email that goes out is related to that, and I put links in my email then that will get people to go to my website and read those articles. And after looking at your website, my website is based on the fact, you know, trying to get organic traffic and building as many pages as you can. But so when I go to your website, it's kind of the opposite concept, is that you're giving away information in your emails, but yet when you go to your website, you know, it's not easily found. You're holding information back in some respects, you know. So I guess I was kind of curious about that when I was visiting with you earlier. I was thinking, well, maybe, because I guess I feel like I'm giving so much away, and at this point I'm not making anything. And I've been told, you know, that my information that I'm teaching is valuable, and I need to be better at charging for that. So I don't, trying to verbalize my question here.
Well, I think I have an idea of where you're going, and I'll start to answer it, and then if I'm not really answering your question, we'll go back to the drawing board. But let's kind of go back to the models. I mean, I use a squeeze, up until very, very recently, 100% squeeze page model. I mean, up until, well, probably about a month ago, you literally couldn't get any information from me unless you randomly stumbled on it, you know, unless I had your name and email address. And, of course, I've been testing some other things recently, but just a 100% squeeze page-based model. And then that obviously contrasts with a website that contains a lot of the information right there on the website. And with the squeeze page model, I mean, the idea with the squeeze page model is that I'm severely limiting I'm limiting even the free information, and I give away tons of it, but I'm limiting it to when I choose to send it out, okay? And then I'm also limiting the opportunities to purchase from me to when I choose to make that opportunity available. And, you know, I think that and I'm going to look at the advantages of both sides. I think that the advantages to doing it this particular way is that you really can craft campaigns. You know, you really can ask people questions, craft campaigns, craft new products that respond to that, and funnel people into those particular sales pages and develop some strong conversion rates as a result of doing that. And And what happens is you limit the visitors to your website to people who have been willing to give you their name and email address. And one thing that I have found online, and I've done some testing to back this up, and the idea that if someone won't give you their name and email address, normally there's a trust issue involved. And, you know, with the online world, unlike offline, you know, offline, if you own a sandwich shop, you know, you really don't need to know somebody's name and phone number, name and email. You don't have to have their credit card if they don't want to give it to you. They can literally open up their wallet and give you cash. And, you know, untrusting people can operate in the offline world. They can still buy sandwiches and, you know, they can literally, you know, take their cash payment for their, you know, utilities down to the, you know, utilities office and make those payments if they're just really untrusting people. But on online, just about the only way that you can take payments is to take someone's credit card or checking account information, whether you're taking it or you're using a third party or using PayPal or something like that. And so what happens is the only people that are going to buy from you are people that have some level of trust. And what I've found is that if someone won't give you their name and email address, then the trust level is very, very, very low. And by forcing them to give you their name and email address, then it gives you the opportunity, number one, to have only people who are qualified to purchase from you anyway, searching through your web pages, which really helps you with your conversion rates, because your conversion rates aren't being watered down by random searchers, okay? And then it also gives you the opportunity to build a relationship with people because they're on your list rather than just finding you one time through Google or Yahoo and then moving on. The advantage to having a more open site, and it's something I've been experimenting with, the advantage to having a more open site is that, you know, if somebody just has a whim right now to purchase something, then they certainly can, you know, purchase it from you. In terms of the free information, you know, I honestly don't believe that even on your website that you probably, I don't believe you're probably giving away too much information. I think that your, the issue in your particular case, Kelly, you're probably, not promoting the product strongly enough. That would be my guess, rather than that you're giving away too much information. And of course, if you are giving away all of the answers in your free information right there on your website, you know, then that's of course a good reason why they might not buy from you. But I think in your case, it's probably that you're not promoting enough. Now, one big difference between putting your article content on a separate blog or on a article marketing directory like I do is that, you know, it's simply used for lead generation. People can use it, you know, to build credibility. You know, people can read it and say, you know, there's a trust level that has been developed now that, you know, that wasn't there previously by being able to see your name in print out there, but it's not right there on your website. So they've read several of your articles, they've been familiar with your name, but perhaps they forget where they're at, and so they can't easily access that free content again. Whereas when it's on your website, they need information, they can simply search through your information and find it. I don't know which model is better. I mean, I've very much preferred the squeeze page model. It's worked very, very, very well for me, and odds are after this test is done, odds are I will go back to a 100% squeeze page based model. You know, I personally like it better. But, you know, to say that it's absolutely the absolute best way to go, you know, I can't do that. Does that help at all, Kelly?
Yes, because I was initially thinking, well, maybe you had, you know, I kind of went initially with the organic traffic model, and then I started thinking, well, maybe your model is the better way to go. But you did answer that, so... and I guess even though I do have the organic traffic model, I can still intertwine the squeeze page, right? Because I don't know how many different squeeze pages you have, but I mean,
well, I personally have
both,
hundreds.
Right?
I personally have hundreds. I mean, certainly you can certainly do both. You know, you can make it so that, you know, every organic page out there becomes a squeeze page. You know, it doesn't have any links to anything else. They have to give you their name and email address to get more information. And as long as you don't have it linked, have anything linked back to your, to any one central page that everybody can get to, then even though it's out there on the World Wide Web, you may have thousands of pages that are indexed and are out there. If the subscriber can't jump around from page to page, then that's the only thing that matters, and you can control the flow of content. You know, so you could try the other way. You know, controlling the flow of content. Another big advantage to controlling the flow of content is you know exactly where what every subscriber has received each day. You know, rather than not knowing, you know, which of your products that somebody has taken a look at in the last 24 hours. You know, I have a pretty good idea what 99% of my subscribers have seen in the last 24 hours, simply because I'm controlling that flow of information.
Okay.
Any other comments, questions? Any questions about building a relationship with the subscribers on your list?
One thing I wanted to ask you, Sean, is giving away rebranded e-books. That seemed to me a good way of building a relationship, but also able to get more contacts outside. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that that for the most part, using the rebranded ebooks is a fine way. You know, if you don't have ebooks, in fact, some of the things that I give away are rebranded ebooks. I mean, I'm not giving them away because of the links. You know, I'm giving them away because of the content, and I'm building a relationship. And you know, I do earn an income from time to time, a 25 here or 50 there. But I think that's a great way to add content that you're able to give away. You know, I'd be careful that you don't give something away just because it's a rebranded thing that has some affiliate links in it, but that you give it away because it has good value and good content for your subscribers.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if it just happens to have some affiliate links, that's great. I think the focus should be the content, not the links. And I don't have anything against doing that. Like I said, I've got some. The key here is delivering strong content to your subscribers. That's the real key. Okay, let's do this, and I'll open up here in a few minutes for some more questions and just throw out some other ideas of things that help build a relationship. And obviously, you know, kind of the elephant in the room here is your own products. You know, anything that you create that's your own product, whether it's an ebook or a CD series or even a teleseminar or a small teleseminar class, you know, any of those help you build relationship. And, you know, obviously that's not building a relationship with the non-buyers portion of your subscriber list, but whenever someone purchases something from you, it should build the relationship. Now, again, you're going to have scenarios where, you know, just as with, you know, you get 100 subscribers in, some people are going to gravitate away from you because you're not meeting their needs. And one thing that's important is you can't meet everybody's needs. Okay, so you are going to meet some people's needs very, very well. You're not going to meet other people's needs at all. The same thing is going to happen with your ebooks. If you sell 100 copies of your ebook, you know, you're going to have a few people who, you know, just don't get anything from it. They either know it all already, or, you know, they don't like you, or, you know, there's a spelling error on page 3 and they, you know, they're an English teacher and they devalue the entire book as a result of that.
Hello?
Yeah. Who's this? Okay. You know, you're going to have people that devalue the book itself, devalue the ebook. You know, those people just won't buy from you again. And, you know, of course, this is where some of your refunds come from. And, you know, the nice thing about refunds is, you know, once somebody buys something and they realize that it's not what they're looking for, they'll never buy anything from you again. And what happens is your higher ticket products, you know, don't even need a refund policy on them, because the people that have purchased your smaller ticket items have already recognized that you have an incredible amount of value. And unless they really like you and they like what you put out, they're not going to buy your higher ticket products. And then you're going to have a portion of people that purchase from you that, you know, fall in love with you and your products, and they literally buy everything that you put out. You know, I've got some buyers, some people on my list that do that. Literally, if I release something, you know, there's a number of people that I can almost guarantee are going to purchase it, you know, just because I put it out. And one more thing I want to cover for this particular class is go back to responding to the emails that people send you. I want to make sure that we include that here. You know, again, that's one of the strongest places that you can build a relationship with your subscribers. And one thing that you can do, because we know that if they ask you a question and you respond and you build relationship, well, the flip side works also. If you ask them a question, they respond, or if you ask them to tell you, you know, to ask you a question, and then they'll ask it, you know, you can ask them, you know, what's the greatest challenge in your particular niche? You know, what's your greatest challenge with PLR products, or what's your greatest challenge in natural health? You know, what is your greatest challenge? And they respond back and they tell you what their problem is, and then you answer that question, you're really building some strong relationships. So that's another way that you're able to meet the needs of the subscribers on your list. Any questions on any of this?
Yes, I have another question.
Sure, go ahead,
Kelly. Do you have a basic like email template or email plan or layout that then directly corresponds with your funnel plan, or how do you operate your email strategy, I guess?
How do I operate my email strategy? What do you mean? What selection of content, ebooks, sales letters, that type of thing that I send out?
Like,
is that the question?
Like when I sit down to write an email, I mean, I struggle every time. And this is because I lack, right now, I know I'm lacking a lot of things. I'm lacking the 1-2-3s and understanding and seeing the big picture of the plan, because I just, you know, I'm still bouncing around from bit of information. So when I sit down to write my upcoming newsletter, I'm not understanding the funnel process of the customer, and so it's a struggle for me, and I spend a lot of time trying to think of what to write. And I'm wondering, do you have a template of a certain email kind of layout that you kind of use again and again that you know is going to get a certain response? I mean, I assume because you understand how you're moving people through your funnel that your emails correspond to where you're trying to take people. And I guess
yes.
I lack that understanding of how to do
yes.
that.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's a number of different types of emails that I send out, and I'm trying to think of which products that I've got that really go into that in detail. But I guess if we were to take, you know, the three types of emails that I would send out, or that I might recommend that you send out. Again, I don't do the single-page content email anymore, hardly at all, because of everything else that I have to offer. Okay, and so, you know, normally what I'll do is I'll suggest, rather than going out and writing a content email and sending it out, take one of the articles that you've written and send it to your subscriber. And there's two ways that you can do that. You can say, you know, dear subscriber, I've written an article recently, and, you know, I think it'll give you some value. And then have a link to that article on your website. Now, in my case, because I don't have many articles on my website, if I do that, I'll send them directly to the eZine Articles page, and they can read it on eZine Articles. Another way that you can do it is actually copy and paste the article into the email. So you'd have, you know, dear subscriber, and then you'll just jump right into the article. Now, one thing that's important is that, you know, make sure, and it sounds like everything you do is high quality, Kelly, just make sure that this particular article, you know, has relevance and contains good information, et cetera, et cetera. And then close, you know, with your name. And you really don't need anything else. You can literally just copy and paste that article into that email. Now, I have a personal theory about the emails where I very rarely will do any kind of a pitch of any kind. I very rarely lead people in any kind of a direction through the emails themselves. I prefer instead to send them to a sales page or an explanation page or a proof page or whatever I'm doing, okay? I will move them to that page, and then there's usually an action on that page. I don't do a lot of it in the email itself. I'm of the belief that I want to condition people to click. And so, you know, for people to get all of the information from me, I want them to click through the email. I do not want them to simply be able to read and consume the email without clicking. It's just something that I personally prefer. And I've got a few emails that I send out, you know, that tell some type of a story. But for me, there's not really a formula. And, you know, obviously, if you read enough of my emails, you probably see that there's a direction. I mean, normally, if I'm going to lead in a certain direction, you know, normally I'll open up the email with something that, you know, relates to the individual. Then after I've related to the individual, I don't usually beat around the bush. I mean, I'll tell people exactly what it is that I'm working on or that I'm doing, and then I tell people how they can benefit from it. But I rarely do that in an email, though. There's very few emails that I personally do that in. I think that you might be putting too much effort into crafting these emails. You know, the purpose of writing the email is to give other people information, to give them information. And so what I say is just go ahead and give it to them. If the information's on a web page of yours, send them a quick email that says, "Hey, check this out," and a link to the page. If there you don't already have the information on your website and you want to give it to them, then, you know, you can either put it on your website and do the same thing or literally give it to them. You know, I don't think that there has to be a huge build-up. There doesn't have to be a huge, "This is why I'm doing it." There certainly can be, but I don't think there really needs to be a huge build-up to, you know, why I'm doing this. You know, go ahead.
I spend so much time on my emails and the articles that I put on my website that I guess I only send my newsletter biweekly. And
mm-hmm.
I know I subscribe to and get a lot of emails to people who send daily or, you know, and a lot of those, you know, I don't get around to reading. However, like I told you earlier today, I did happen to read the one that caught my eye and the reason I'm on this call. So, I mean, if you're saying to write shorter emails, then what do you do as far as frequency, and what have you found along that line then?
Well, I usually send out an email every day. I don't recommend that for most people because most people, you know, they can't deliver strong content every single day. And then, of course, I'm sure I've got subscribers that would argue that I don't send out strong content every day, that some of it isn't strong content. But what happens is you do polarize people. If you send out an email every single day, the advantage, you know, and again, I'm just telling you what I'm doing, what I personally do. By sending out an email every single day, I am very specifically targeting people that are hungry for information right now, and hungry people right now tend to spend more money than people that aren't hungry. Okay, obviously, the people that aren't hungry for information, that don't really need so much information, you know, they will unsubscribe from my list. They're not really my target. They're not my target audience. Okay, I am not afraid of losing a subscriber because I'm mailing them too much. You know, but I have a huge list. I can afford to lose. You know, I can afford to lose subscribers. If you're starting out with a smaller list, and if you're not working full time, if it's not a full time income for you, then I don't know that mailing an email, you know, every single day. My guess, most people, most niches, two times a week, three times a week max, is probably a good frequency. You know, I mean, you've alluded, Kelly, a couple of times to this idea that you spend so much time on the articles and so much time on the emails. And, you know, first of all, I have to say that probably as a result of all of that time that you spend there, then your content is probably very good. It's very, very high quality emails, very, very high quality articles. But the bottom line is, spending all of that time isn't generating more sales. And so I would challenge you, to find ways to write articles that that you can write quickly. I believe in the third recording in this series, I've gone into the article writing in a lot of detail, you know, how to write the articles very, very quickly. And then in a couple of both of my article marketing ebooks and my article marketing CD package, you know, they all go into in detail how to write them quickly. The idea is to quickly get the information out, sit down and write it. It doesn't have to be perfect. Spelling needs to be right and grammar. But, you know, other than that, the article doesn't have to be perfect. It needs to be accurate, but it doesn't have to be perfect. And you're better off writing 25 imperfect articles one day than writing one, you know, perfect article. And odds are somebody reads it. A lot of people, when they read it, they're not going to be able to tell the difference between what you believe to be a perfect article and what you believe to be an imperfect article, because their standard is different, you know. So, but again, I think that that goes back to an overall strategy. If you knew exactly what you were trying to accomplish, exactly how much money you wanted to make, exactly how many ebooks and how many CDs and how many teleseminar classes, and at exactly what price you were going to sell them, you'd end up spending more time promoting the products rather than writing the articles. But I think that's probably a different issue. That's a different issue altogether. But yeah, I would say you've definitely got to move away from spending so much time on the articles. So we're running up on the end of the hour, and I don't have the time to physically go over on this one. Let's do this. If there's one more relevant question, I'll take it and I'll answer it, and then we're going to have to call this a wrap. Anybody else with a relevant question? Okay.
Hi, Sean.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
who's this?
This is Tony.
Oh, Tony, how are you?
I'm fine. How about you? I was just wondering whether you use viral marketing or some kind of leverage by building your list.
By viral marketing, you're talking about leverage before they become subscribers. So, or even after they become subscribers, where they have an incentive to invite other people in to become subscribers, something viral there. I don't do anything like that, Tony. And I'll say this, I probably should, but, you know, my focus has been on some other things. That's one thing that I don't do, and I probably should do it. That's probably one thing I don't do as well as I probably should. There's definitely a place for viral marketing, you know, whether it's through free ebooks, you know, or whether it's through literally making, you know, giving subscribers an opportunity to become an affiliate or otherwise, you know, let their friends know or let their list members know or whatever. That's just not something I focus on, Tony.
Okay. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome. Any other questions for me?
I don't want to monopolize, but so how much of your time is invested in subscriber relationships as far as like teleconferencing, phone, email, or in person? If you could have a quick answer.
I'm going to do the best I can to. I think that almost everything that I do in some way relates to building that relationship. And so if we add in the teleseminar hours and we add in the complimentary coaching, we add in all of that, I mean, I probably spend 25 or 30 hours a week on everything, okay? And then certainly if you add in the emails that I respond to, then, you know, we might be closer to 25 or 30 hours, or, you know, maybe 20 to 25 hours. If we include everything, if we just include the time that I spend writing emails, you know, I spend maybe 5 minutes a day on emails, and then, you know, responding to people's emails, I probably spend 30 minutes a day, and then a couple of days a week I do something like this that's an hour long, and then, you know, I spend – I spend, you know, probably 15 or 20 hours a week doing some form of coaching. And so, I mean, you could say I spend 5 minutes or 35 minutes, but, you know, if you include things like these classes, I mean, obviously this class, you know, it's a relationship builder, but it's, you know, it also creates income. So, it's hard to say, but, you know, if you include everything that you mentioned.
You're doing a lot of talking, though, versus just writing articles.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the article writing, I mean, I outsource all the article writing now. I have between 400 and 600 articles written for me every month that are outsourced. I don't spend the time. When I first started online, I spent 25 or 30 hours a week just writing articles. So as I've grown, as the income has grown, you know, where I spend my time has changed. So, okay, I've gone over, and today I've got another commitment, so I can't keep going. So we'll go ahead and call this call a wrap. And
thanks a lot, Sean.
Yeah, I think that's about it. You're welcome.
Thanks for your help, Sean.
Bye, Doc.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye, all.